Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program growing to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who are like me and have come to realize that there's something destructive about the religious and political institutions, the media reporting and military interventionism, as well as jaundiced economic schemes that are poisoning our countries. We realize that the institutions that were established to solve these problems have become the problem. So rather than seeking to rearrange the deck chairs on our Titanic of state, we instead are trying to expose the reasons behind the malfeasance, understand who is perpetrating the great calamities that we read in our news, and where these calamities are taking us. And as a result, so that there is known hope, so that there is a solution for all of our listeners, during our second hour, typically, today we'll begin in the first hour, we're going to consider evidence and reason. We're going to consider God's proposal on His terms. And you can determine whether or not you wish to avail yourself of His covenant rather than rely on government or religious options. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. I'd like to backtrack a little bit on our presentation of Yirmiyahu. That is Jeremiah, for those who prefer the corrupted variations of Hebrew names. Unfortunately, Jeremiah doesn't mean anything. Yirmiyahu does. It means rise up and live in Yahweh's shelter. Yirmiyahu was is unlike most of the books of that are found in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, in that it begins by telling us that this prophetic revelation through Yirmiyahu was specifically designed to enlighten Gentiles. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there, particularly because of religious indoctrination, who have been led to believe that the Torah and the prophets, as well as the Psalms, were written to the Jews and that they were strictly a Jewish book and they are germane to the Jewish religion. Well, part of that is true. Most of it is untrue. According to the author of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, who is God, his name is Yahweh. That's his one and only name. He tells us that there is only one Torah, which means teaching, does not mean law. Only one teaching for everyone. There's only one covenant for everyone. There's only one God for everyone. There's only one path to God for everyone. And while God's chosen people are clearly Yisraelites, Yehudim, Yudim means related to Yah, Yisraelite are individuals who engage and endure with God. And while the individuals that he chose to reveal himself through were either Yehudim or Yisraelites, exclusively Yehudim or Yisraelites, and that the language that he chose to express himself, the language of heaven, is in fact Hebrew, there is no other revelation. So it's either you listen to what God has to say in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, or you haven't any way of knowing what God had to say. And it's really that simple when you get down to it. Now, in this book called Rise Up and Live in Yahweh's Shelter, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, the entire book focuses on God's animosity towards religion and politics, military and economic schemes. It is if there was a primer for this particular show, particularly the typical first hour of this show, which exposes all the reasons you ought not be loyal to or aligned with any religion, any political party, you ought not be patriotic, you ought not be supportive of your military, you ought not be an aficionado of a particular economic scheme, is presented in this book. And it's presented overwhelmingly, undeniably, and conclusively. Yirmiyahu's prophetic witness exists to expose the things about Babylon that God does not like. Now, he's not using Babylon as a country per se, just as he doesn't use Egypt as a country per se. He'll speak of things that happen there. and he will use it as a metaphor, as an example, as a symbol. But for the most part, when God speaks of whether it be Mitzrayim, which is his term for Egypt, which means crucibles, or of Babylon from Babel in Hebrew, which means corruption, he is speaking of the symbolic influence of these places on society as a whole. Now, for example, a great way to prove that is that Yosha's last statements to Yahuchanan, in what's called the Revelation to Yahuchanan, he urges people who were willing to listen to him to come out of Babylon. Just come out of her, my people. He even speaks at the very end, days that we have not yet witnessed, of Babylon finally falling. And yet Babylon as a nation fell many centuries ago. It fell as a nation more than 2,000 years ago. You know, you'd be turning back the clock to very near 525, 550 BCE is when Babylon ceased to exist as a nation. So it's what Babylon represents. You know, the whore of Babylon represents the corruption that man conceived that was conceived there, but then brought forth from there to infect other places of the world over long chasms of time. And principally, the things that God speaks about that bother him about the Babylonian mentality is nationalized religion, religion of all kinds, but particularly when religion and politics blend together. He has great animosity towards religious and political leaders. And the same is true about military leaders, because they're off in the business of killing and destroying. Very few military leaders actually protect. You know, we don't send in America, we don't send our troops to Afghanistan to protect Americans. We don't send our troops into Iraq to protect Americans. We don't bomb Libya to protect Americans. We didn't send our troops into Vietnam to protect Americans. We didn't fight the Spanish-American War to protect Americans. We most certainly didn't fight the Civil War to protect Americans. So it is a myth that that is what militaries are used for. They're an aggressive force, and that's how they're used in today's world. So in the midst of this treatise on all the things that are wrong with politics and religion, with militarism and jaundiced economic schemes, in the midst of this book, Yahweh says, you know, I also want to make certain that you are not without hope. I know this sounds dire, and it's going to last a very long time. And these institutions, these human institutions, are extraordinarily corrupt. And for those who embrace them, for those who depend on them, for those willing to trust them, you're going to find that they're wholly unreliable. You know, I'm not going to, at the end of time, say, you know, you didn't have many other choices, and I know that religion was pervasive and politics was popular, and, you know, I understand why you made those choices, and I'm just going to look the other way, and you can come into my heaven anyway, because you had a good heart, and you didn't ruin other people's lives by being an axe murderer, so we'll just overlook that religion stuff. God's not going to do that. He says, you were warned. I communicated to you as clearly as words would allow that I'm opposed to religion, I'm opposed to politics, I'm opposed to patriotism, I'm opposed to militarism. And you chose to embrace those things. So, you know, it's like this statement in Hosea that we read the other day, where God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowing. And he specifically says what they have chosen to ignore, to be oblivious to, which is his Torah. If you choose that, that is which, while it's your option, these are the consequences. So I want to go back through the statement that Christianity claims to be based upon, and to show you that while this is a stunningly uplifting and powerful statement, it actually destroys the credibility of Christianity. God begins, behold, The days are coming. In other words, this is a prophetic witness. Prophetically declares Yahweh. When I will cut, karat is the term that's almost always used, and in relationship to the covenant. The covenant is cut. The symbolism of that, of course, is circumcision. Circumcision is a cutting. And the reason he uses cutting, and the reason Yahusha says, I didn't come to bring peace, I came to bring division, is that God wants to invite us to separate ourselves from the family of man and from all of human corruptions to his family. And there's a line there in the sand, if you will. You know, God's red line is for real. He's not going to remove it. He's not going to change it. He's not going to go back on it. He's drawn a line. You either have to be on his side or you can be on the human side. But that's your choice. So behold, days are coming, prophetically declares Yahweh, when I will cut relationally with the household and family of Yisrael, and relationally with the household and family of Yahudah, a renewed and restored family-oriented covenant relationship. Now, there were a couple of interesting insights here that we should talk about before we move on, and this is being shared as an affirmation of what we've talked about previously. God defined covenant here because this is all about the covenant. The covenant is Bereth, the family-oriented covenant relationship. The reason that I modify covenant with family-oriented and relationship is because Bereth is based on Be'eth. Be'eth is household and family in Hebrew. It is the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The letter was originally drawn to depict a home with a singular way in. And so we're talking, God's talking about family here. And the covenant is his family. Now, in this particular case, he's saying that he's cutting a relationship with Yisrael and with Yahudah. This book is written to Gentiles. But it uses Yisrael and Yahudah as the examples, as the test case, if you will, so that we can understand what will happen to us, good or bad, based upon the choices that we make. So it's a classic standard in scientific experimentation to have an individual, a group, be a standard by which you can then test and model choices. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 31:31 declaration where Yahweh says, behold, I'm going to cut a relational agreement, a family-oriented covenant relationship with the household of Yisrael and the household of Yahudah. The reason that those two are separated is that in the book of Hosea, God specifically states that he's divorcing himself of Yisrael. Yisrael represents 10 of the 12 tribes. It represents the northern kingdom. And they were destroyed by the Assyrians. But he said, you know, I've still got some work to do with Yahudah, and specifically talked about how through Yahudah he was going to heal so that the relationship could ultimately be repaired and the relationship could then be reconciled. And it was out of Yahudah that the Messiah Yahusha arrived. So if you're reading this, the first thing you need to think about is that Yahudah, which means related to Yah, represents one of the 12 tribes, and it's also symbolic of the southern kingdom. And Yisrael, representing 10 of the 12 tribes in the northern kingdom, they were forever split. During the end of Solomon's reign, and the reason for the split was that Yisrael became religious before Yahudah did. And ultimately, Yahudah was divorced because they also became religious and formed political treaties. But the northern kingdom, Yisrael, did much more aggressively and much more quickly. And that's why God said goodbye. And there is a myth that I want to address, though, that is very popular among Christians. In fact, there's a lot of best-selling books that are published on these notions that God is judging countries like America and that 9/11 was a sign of God's judgment. That's utter nonsense. God doesn't judge countries. He views Yisrael as the test case, the example. And so he has a lot to say about Yisrael collectively and Yehudah collectively. But in terms of God engaging to say, okay, I'm going to make certain some Muslims get in some airplanes and I'm going to help them fly those planes into the World Trade Center because that's the way I'm going to judge America. It's utter and complete nonsense. Man brings harm onto mankind. God just steps out of the way. And that's to a large degree what has happened and why the Northern Kingdom failed. God just stepped out of the way because they had stepped away from him. So this then goes on. But before we read the next section, realize it goes on, but it no longer applies. It could not apply to Gentiles. God is saying that this relationship that he is going to cut, this covenant he's going to cut, is going to be with Yisrael and with Yehudah, not with the Gentile church. So he says it will not be exactly the same as the covenant, which relationally I cut with their fathers in the day when, firmly grasping me in their hand, I led them out of the realm of the crucible of Egypt, which relationally they broke, disassociating themselves from my family-oriented covenant relationships, though I was married to them, prophetically declares Yahweh. The insights here are also significant. God reaffirmed his covenant relationship, which is what he means by cutting it, when he served to lead them away from Mitzrayim, the crucible of Egypt, which is symbolic of man's propensity to enslave humans through religion, politics, militarism, and economic schemes. That's why Yahweh had to engage to lead his people away from those human schemes in Mitzrayim, the crucible of Egypt. And in doing so, what you find is that God's path to lead his children to freedom is the same path that he invites all of us to walk away from religious and political corruption. The doorway, if you recall, began with Passover. It was the doorway to life. The next day was unyeasted bread, matzah, which is the means to be purified of all of that corruption that we have endured when we're part of society. So as part of the Egyptian society, which was rife with political and religious corruption, where politics and religion were really one and the same, God wanted to cleanse his children from that, and that's why unyeasted bread, with yeast being the fungus, was removed from them. It's interesting, too, that the Egyptians, their monetary system was beer, which is made using yeast. Now, as you move through this, then, God says that he himself was their savior. And that's also true with Yahusha. Yahusha is part of Yahweh, set apart from him for the express purpose of saving us. So there is not a separate savior. The savior is Yahweh himself. And the path that he leads us all down, invites us to walk, is the same path that he used here in the crucible of Egypt. We'll return to this passage after the commercial break. Back to Shatteringness. We're talking about one of the most important predictions in all of the prophets, and we're in the midst of Yirmiyahu 31:32 at the moment. God said he's speaking to Yisrael and Yehudah, which would be the northern and the southern kingdom, but by definition, individuals who engage and endure with God and individuals who relate to Yah and are related to Yah. He said that they broke, they're the test case, and they disassociated themselves from, they violated and frustrated, tore apart, split away from, God speaking here in first person, my family-oriented covenant relationship. And so, while God isn't changing the terms and conditions to participate in the relationship, what he is saying here is that Yisrael and Yehudah chose to violate those terms and conditions. And so, they were separated from God. And God goes on to say that even though he was married to them. And that's important because the covenant is based upon family and is based upon a monogamous marriage relationship. This is the part which is gets to be particularly interesting. Indeed, with this familial covenant relationship, which I will cut with the house of Yisrael. Now, you notice here, it's not Yisrael and Yehuda anymore. Why? Because Yisrael actually represents all 12 tribes. There was a time where Yisrael and Yehuda split apart. But now, with this reconciliation, not only is God reconciling his relationship with his chosen people, his children, but they are being reconciled with one another. And rather than having two groups, north and south, they are one. And Yisrael is the term that would also apply to all, because Jacob was renamed Yisrael, and Jacob is the father of the 12. So indeed, with this familial covenant relationship, which relationally I will cut with the house of Yisrael after those days. So this is a prophetic testimony, and it's after days that he has now presented, which are just rife with horrid militaristic, religious, and political corruption and malfeasance. So after those days, he says, I'm going to cut this with Yisrael, prophetically declares Yahweh. And what is he saying now is going to be the uniqueness of this covenant relationship that is different from his previous covenant relationship. Well, he lists one thing. I will actually give my Torah, completely providing and producing my teaching and instruction within their inner nature. And upon their heart, I will actually write it. So, the only difference is that we've already been given a copy of the Torah, but God hasn't placed it inside of us. We have full access to the Torah, except God hasn't written it on our hearts. By placing it inside of us and writing it on our hearts, God eliminates the opportunity to ignore it or to reject it. He also eliminates the opportunity to corrupt it. And as a result, while we still have free will in terms of acting upon this set of teachings and guidance that are now incorporated into our lives, perfectly incorporated into our lives, we no longer have one choice, and that is we no longer have the choice to ignore, reject, or corrupt the teaching, because there's a perfect copy of it written inside of us. So the very instance that happened in the Garden of Great Joy, Garden of Eden, where Satan was allowed to slither in, and between Satan and Chawa, they corrupted God's testimony, and based upon that, made a choice which was bad, let's just put it that way. Well, in this particular case, once Yahweh reconciles his relationship with Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God, the choice, the opportunity to corrupt his testimony will vanish. Now, the reason that God can do that then, and he hasn't done it yet, obviously, none of us have a perfect copy of the Torah that God himself has written inside of us, nor has Yisrael and Yehuda been reconciled and become one. The reason that this has not happened yet is not everyone has made their final choice. God's going to allow people to continue to choose, to ignore, to reject, to accept, or to oppose, even to corrupt his Torah teaching into the very last hour. And when he returns, the last choice will have been made. You're either with him or you're against him. And those who are with him will long for, as I do, as so many of you do who are listening to this program, to having a perfect copy of God's teaching literally inscribed inside of us. And those who don't, they will be instantly annihilated upon his return. God, it's nothing that God has to do. It's not like God's going to say, zap, 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 you're dead. No, just the fact that he's coming back considerably less diminished as light as opposed to in a physical, corporeal way is going to vaporize those souls who are not enveloped in his spirit by way of his covenant. God's concluding comment here is, and I shall be God to and for them, and they themselves, they to me, will be his family, which is all God intends. So his family, his covenant family, will have His Torah teaching, His guidance, the Father's instructions, it literally is part of the fabric of their lives. Now, what's the result of this? God's closing statement here is profound. He says, "And they will not teach or learn man's errant pronouncements, thoughts, thinkings, or reasoning any longer, or man's kind's despondency and grief, claiming to actually know Yahweh. Because then indeed they all will actually know and recognize me, from the smallest, youngest, and least significant, up to the biggest, oldest, and most influential, prophetically declares Yahweh. For indeed then I will have forgiven their sin, and accordingly their offenses against the standard will not be remembered any longer." That is the result of having everyone that survives having chosen to embrace the covenant. You know, to embrace the covenant, you have to come to know who Yahweh is. You need to understand what He is offering. You need to choose to have a relationship with Him. And you need to act upon the conditions of that relationship. And there are five of them. And as a result of those five conditions of the relationship, Yahweh promises five benefits, and the benefits are articulated here. So God is saying, once I write my Torah inside of those who have chosen to be part of my covenant, then there will be no propensity, not even an ability, to teach or learn man's errant pronouncements, thinking, and reasoning. There will be no political activists, no religious activists. There'll be no militaries. There'll be no economic schemes. The very fact that the Torah is inscribed inside of us and that we have perfect access to what God conveyed in Hebrew, understanding all of the jots and tittles, all of the little, the smallest letters and the strokes of the letters in every word, then the only one we're going to learn from is Yahweh, because Torah means to teach. There'll be no more pronouncements or thoughts that are from human institutions. And therefore, there'll be none of man's despondency and grief. That's the reason why God can't allow religious and political, militaristic and economic-minded scheming people into His home. Because if He did, they would continue to do what they've always done. And that heaven would be no different than life here on earth. Despondent. So, with man's religious and political pontifications out of the way, gone, there's no more despondency and grief. At that point, God says, everyone actually knows Yahweh. Know Him by name. Know Him by reputation. Recognize who He is. Accept who He is. Because then indeed they will all know and recognize me, He says. And He used two different words here for know and recognize. The first is da'at, the other is yada. The da'at talks about being aware of the evidence and making a thoughtful conclusion based upon the evidence. Yada is a relational concept, means that you've come to recognize, you've come to realize, you've come to accept, you're familiar with who Yahweh is. Both come into play. Then He says, from the smallest, youngest, and least significant. That means everybody that survives His return, regardless of age, regardless of stature, all the way from the smallest, youngest, and least significant to the biggest, oldest, and most influential, all the same. We're all God's children at that point. We all know who He is. We all are familiar with Him. We all accept Him, acknowledge Him, revere, respect, embrace Him. Then Yahweh says, for indeed, I will have forgiven their sin. Because salvation, my friends, and this is really important, and it is conveyed here. Salvation is not God's plan. The covenant relationship is God's plan. God is not interested in saving everyone. He's interested and promised to save His children. This is all about reconciling the covenant relationship. And as a byproduct of that, God says, indeed, I will have forgiven their sin. He only forgives the sin of those who reconciled their covenant relationship with Him. Period. If you have not embraced the five terms and conditions of the covenant, you cannot be saved. God's not trying to build an eternity filled with people who have made a mess here on earth. So, understand that this is the first mention of salvation. Everything else in this prophetic declaration, which is prophetic of his return, is about reconciling the covenant relationship and incorporating the Torah into our lives. And he says there's two huge benefits of that. One is that all of human religious and political teaching and doctrine and the grief that it inspires is all gone. And second, that everyone is forgiven. Now, the other aspect of this is that their offenses against the standard, which is the Torah, will not be remembered any longer. That is the beauty of God. He is not all-knowing. Thank goodness he's not all-knowing. He specifically tells us that he is going to forget. He is going to erase, as if they never existed, all of our offenses, so we appear perfect in his eyes. We're vindicated. There have been a series of commercials that have played as part of the Salem news package, I assume, for this program, that are part of the round robin of ads selected by Genesis Communication Network, the radio program, the radio syndicator that this program is hosted by, that are moronic. Now, most of them are just getting prepared for the last days, recognizing that the currency is being destroyed, encouragement to buy gold, water filters and preparatory kinds of things for your home and for your family, and most of that is really quite good. There's a fellow who is touts that his crusade is against the Obama administration because they're unbiblical. And in this particular ad, what he said was that how can you get more unbiblical than denying the building of a cross? Well, Larry's with us on the phone here now. I'm going to ask Larry, did God reveal a book called the Bible?
No, that was made by men. It was named after a sun goddess, Biblio, actually.
Yeah, Biblio is a goddess, the daughter of the sun, the daughter of Amun-Ra in Egypt. Her name was taken by a Phoenician town, and then the name of Biblia became synonymous with a woven scroll made from papyrus, because papyrus grew in this Phoenician town. And so the name of the Phoenician town, which was named after the Egyptian goddess, became the Greek word for book or scroll. And from that Egyptian sun goddess's name, you find the term Bible on the cover of a book that Christians like this fellow would say is theirs from God, but God never uses the term Biblia, does he?
No, he never uses the term cross either.
Yeah, so that would be the second problem. Is there anything remotely related to a cross in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
No. I mean, other than, the symbols that were used in pagan worship services. You can go back to the Druid swastika, the Roman chiario, the Egyptian unka.
Yeah.
Those are all crosses.
And the Camus.
Use the term upright pole.
So God does have a term that is somewhat analogous to the basis of cross. Somewhat analogous. It's quite different. But he uses the term upright pillar, upright pole, upright one. Speaks of the wooden lintels and the beam that comprised the doorway of Passover. And so he speaks of these upright pillars. Not only he has Edon in his Hebrew text relative to the tabernacle, and the Edon is the upright pillar that holds the tent of the witness, the tabernacle of the witness, up. That is placed into the foundation of the tabernacle.
And yes, he threw some religious copy at it. Sidon got changed to Adon, Adonai, which means my Lord. And so suddenly Yahweh's name gets kicked out of his own words.
Yeah.
They put the names of pagan gods in his mouth because they're putting them in his words. And he says anybody that does that will die. He says that right there in Dabarim, which means what? Words.
Right.
So if people think words don't count, they need to really pay attention to what Yahweh's words might say, you know, and look at the religious corruptions.
So 100% of the times that Edon is used in the Torah, it describes an upright pillar that is set into the foundation of the tabernacle that holds the tent of the witness up so that it is secure and can be enlarged. And that's really the role of Yahusha, who is the upright one. He is the upright pillar. He is the Edon that is the physical upright presence that enables God's home, his tabernacle of the witness, to be made secure and to be enlarged. That concept was translated into Greek using steros, which means upright pillar. But the Roman Catholic Church chose to change steros to cross. And that is how you get the Christian cross. And even in that, the symbolism of the Christian cross, which is a kind of a lowercase t, is not the apparatus upon which Yahusha fulfilled Pesach, Passover. The symbol is entirely, as Larry has stated, pagan, as is the term Bible. We'll return to Shattering This after the commercial break.